Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 51. We are back and we are excited to have Stephen Hayden join us, who writes for Grantland and who is desperately looking for a CD that he's hoping to find but maybe not be able to locate it. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and I've officially not found it, I think. So, I don't know, we'll have to do, if I do find it, we'll have to do like a part two of this podcast so that your listeners can be updated on the situation. This is going to be like a big cliffhanger for your listeners. So.
It's one of the most interesting things that's ever happened on the podcast, actually. So, so we're doing pretty well.
Well, you know, I'm trying to sex it up for you guys here, you know, and mystery.
It's definitely up a couple levels already, so but thanks a lot again for thanks for joining us.
Like True Detective now, you know? Like True Detective. Really, what's the mystery, this enigmatic CD? Is it out there? Is it not out there? Is it a ghost?
What is a CD, you know?
That's true.
The difference between this podcast and True Detective is they're smart and they just ended it at like 8 episodes. We're on episode like 51, you know? We're like, we didn't learn our lesson.
Still gone. this is the 51st?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Awesome.
So, thanks again for joining us, Stephen. And RJ and I shared your article as soon as it came out. And I guess to clarify that, you wrote a really great piece for Grantland about Phish, and it was entitled something along the lines of, Is Phish a Great Band? Right? 30 right. years into the making or something like that? I'm sorry. Right. Yeah, Is Phish a Great Band?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. I mean, that was sort of like the central question. And I was also kind of talking about what we consider when we talk about bands being great. How with a band like Phish, it might be like different criteria than that you might use otherwise, maybe. So I don't know.
Yeah, it really tied together nicely, and it's probably because you're really good at writing. But but at the end, you know, it tied together nicely the whole thought and the fact that they may be responsible for kind of changing the landscape of how we think about bands, and that also has to do with a lot of other things other than just, you know, the four nerds from Vermont. But also a really awesome picture that you guys chose of Big Red at the top of the article. We'll obviously post a link to the article if people who are listening haven't read it, but I imagine most of our listeners have read it.
Yeah, it started a good conversation, you know. And input from Rob, I don't know, what was your experience, Steven? Did it start a good conversation or an annoying one or what?
No, it was good. I mean, I feel like generally the reception was positive from Phish fans. Like, I wasn't really sure what, you know, how they would react. There's really like two separate camps with a story like that. There's like the hardcore fans who read the story, and then there's everybody else. And, you know, I kind of anticipated that like hardcore fans might hate it. And then I also thought that like everybody else might hate it. Because like Phish is one of those bands that like you either know everything about and you really love them, or you don't know anything about and like you either strongly dislike them or you're like hostile at least to like learning anything, you know? It just seems like there's just not a lot of middle ground. And that was one thing that really interested me, you know, as I got into them, because they were this band that, you know, had this long history and obviously they have a huge audience, but like, they're not like most bands in that, like most bands, if they can play an arena, you know, and sell out an arena, they have some sort of like footprint in the mainstream, you know, or at least they did at some point, like, you know, Pearl Jam, for instance, was huge in the 90s. You know, they sold millions of records. They had songs on MTV. And even people who don't like Pearl Jam now, like, they're aware. They could probably name a couple Pearl Jam songs. Sure. You know, even if they hate those songs. Phish, like, they can play big arenas and they can have this huge audience that has sustained them for decades. And yet, like, the people who are on the outside who might not get Phish or like Phish, you know, they don't necessarily know any of their music. You know, they probably couldn't name a song or an album. And, you know, it just seemed like this interesting thing, like, where, like, I even had that in a way where I was like, well, Phish, that's just something I know I don't like. And at some point, I was just like, well, why do I feel that way? Like, you know, I'm kind of curious to check this out. And I did, and there were a lot of things that I ended up liking that I thought was really interesting. And just from, like, sort of like a cultural aspect, too, it was kind of cool to, like, enter this new world that, like, I knew nothing about and to kind of have this sense of discovery.
Right. It's great. It reminds me of kind of my introduction to the Grateful Dead too. It, like, the voluminous history was there. You knew nothing about it. And you just want to kind of delve into it and check it out, which is awesome. And it also kind of leads me to my next question, which would be, other than conversations with Rob and the article, what got you into the band? What really turned you on to the band? What was there a moment that you thought, like, oh wow, this is, I can't believe I've been missing this, or I'm in and I'm gonna, you know, be a fan going forward?
I don't know. I mean, it was kind of like an extended process, like getting it, you know, talking to Rob about it, you know, talking about Rob Mitchum, who is a writer for Pitchfork, and also I know he has, like, a Twitter handle, Phish Crit. Like, I think he tweets about Phish shows a lot.
Yeah.
It was interesting, too, talking to Rob for my story, the fact that he does have a history writing for Pitchfork. Like, that was used against him among some Phish fans. Like, automatically rejected him. Because, you know, for Rob, it's not about the albums. It's about, you know, the live shows. Like, he doesn't really like the albums. And I tend to agree with him. I'm not really huge into the Phish records. Like, I have a bunch of them, or I've heard of them at least, and I don't really dig them as much as the live stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, a lot of people went after him for thinking that, and they like, you know, seized upon the Pitchfork thing as him. Well, you're obviously not a Phish fan because you write for Pitchfork, which, you know, it just goes to show that, like, in music cultures, like, people always find reasons to, like, besmirch other people, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so weird, like, how we're so provincial about these things even after you get older and you're an adult, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
You know? Yeah. It's like, well, you're a Phish fan, so you must be XYZ, you know? But then, right, the Phish fan who's being judged like that, they'll turn around and then do the same thing to, like, a Pitchfork writer. And then you have poor Rob, who's a Phish fan and a Pitchfork writer, so he gets double stigmatized in a way.
He doesn't fit anywhere.
But yeah, I mean, I think the first show that I heard that I really, really liked was the Halloween 1996 show. And the reason why, obviously, was because they covered an album that I love, which is Remain in Light. And so, you know, that was like a easy transition for me, you know, because they were playing songs I already knew. Sure. You know. But
did you think they played them well?
Yeah, I did. I thought they played them really well. I mean, I have, I mean, I, you know, the Talking Heads in that era, like, the, you know, 1980-81, right. I think it's, like, one of the best live bands of all time. Like, the live bootlegs from that era are amazing. Like, you know, they have, like, a 10-piece band, and Adrian Belew playing guitar and all that stuff. Like, I have a lot of that stuff. So, like, I loved the live versions of that. So it was interesting to compare how the Talking Heads played it versus, like, Phish. And you can definitely tell that, like, Phish knew those live bootlegs. I mean, the influence of the live versions of those songs are very evident in the way that Phish plays them. But, you know, Phish is only four people. It's not 10 people, you know, and the interpretations that they're doing on there are interesting. Also, I believe on the first disc, they cover Highway to Hell in that show.
Yeah, definitely.
I believe. Yeah, that's right.
And that's kind of interesting, too. I mean, what got me into Phish, I think, was, you know, I mean, I love the Grateful Dead. too. And although it's interesting with the Grateful Dead, they have a similar thing to Phish, where it can be a high bar of entry for people who are on the outside. Right. I think the stigma with the Dead has gone away in a lot of ways. But even now, there are people who like get really angry if you defend the Grateful Dead for some reason. You know, it's like they're another band where you either get it or you don't. But I think Phish is more so than the Dead, probably because the Dead have been around longer. I think that will go away with Phish more as they get older and become more entrenched, even though they've been around for 30 years. I mean, even the Dead, I think, had more of a mainstream footprint than Phish did, you know.
Yeah, I think, and Arjun
had like Chuck In and Casey Jones and songs like that, that like were on FM radio and stuff.
Yeah, and the music,
more like, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and the music's more approachable too, right? And just in for a casual fan.
Well, I mean, the thing that, you know, people compare the Dead and Phish, obviously, for sort of very superficial reasons, but like, the similarity that I saw between the two bands was that, like, with the Grateful Dead, like, what they were doing was taking 20th century American music, you know, blues, country, folk, bluegrass, early rock and roll, and jazz, synthesizing it and recontextualizing it, you know, like, putting their own spin on it and making their own music. And with Phish, I realized that they were doing the same thing, but just with the music of like the 60s and 70s, with like prog rock, there's obviously a funk influence in their band, especially like later on in the 90s and afterward. You know, there's even like a 90s indie rock influence with them, like with, you know, with Pavement, and I know Trey's solo records have kind of like more of an indie rock feel to it. So, and also like with classic rock history, like how approach classic rock history and kind of rejigger it. And in some ways they're playing homage. In some cases they're sort of taking the piss out of classic rock, like that Highway to Hell cover, for example, in the, you know, it's a loving cover, but it's definitely not like, you know, like the AC/DC version is, you know, this sort of like the epitome of cock rock, like arena rock, and Phish is not a cock rock band. You know, they're having fun with, I mean, they're not making fun of the song, but they're definitely not playing it like straightforward. And then they do the Remain in Light thing. And just like the mythology around the band is like very classic rock, but it's also kind of like an irreverent version of that, you know. So to me, that was interesting. Just as I love classic rock history, mm-hmm. and I felt like Phish was sort of taking all of that, all the classic rock history that predated them, and like, you know, shaking it around and doing it in a way that the Dead did it with like 20th century American music. So for me, moving forward, like the Phish stuff that I was most drawn to was like the music most in that vein. Like, and Rob helped me out with this. Like, Rob sort of like broke down the different periods of Phish, and like, you know, like early 90s, you know, was maybe like when they were, before they were an arena rock act, like they were maybe quirkier and little more, you know, they would do more kind of bluegrassy things. And then like 93, 95, they became this arena rock band. Mm-hmm. And that's the era that I tend to like the most,
mm-hmm.
because that's their kind of most classic rocky period. Because like later on in the 90s, they seem to get a little spacier and a little funkier, and that stuff I'm still not totally into as much. I tend to like the more sort of like, you know, we're doing like a weird version of like, yes, Frank Zappa and the Beatles all rolled into one, like that kind of era of the band is what I like the most. So
that's fair. Well,
that's kind of like a long rambling answer, but that's like my theory of Phish as like a relative outsider newcomer guy.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what I've always been most interested in about them.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. I mean, it's interesting the different sort of eras that you're talking about, because the show that we were going to chat more about, which you mentioned, Halloween 96, that kind of actually was, I think, a little bit of a turning point to a new era for the band, like post Halloween 96, they were playing differently, and the next year and the next 2 years were totally different, and who knows what would happen if they covered something more kind of traditional classic rock. But Talking Heads, right, with the, you know, it kind of changed the way they improvised, which I think is, or at least influenced it, which I think is pretty awesome.
It does seem like a bridge to like getting kind of funkier.
Yeah,
you know, 'cause
yeah,
that's definitely a funky record, because I know that they had done like the White Album, and did they do Dark Side of the Moon?
Not before this.
Not yet. Yeah,
okay. just White Album and Quadrophenia were the two before this, which are both pretty straightforward. And then this happens, and then, you know, the future of how they play is sort of changed, which is just, it's pretty awesome to think about now.
It goes directly to your evaluation, though, Stephen, of the fact that they were pretty classic rock back then, and they were covering those, you know, those two albums, which are, I guess, classic pop and then classic rock.
Because you guys are asking like what kind of shows I like. I guess I, you know, like that summer of 94 era, yeah. I guess there's like a lot of shows that I have that I've, you know, gotten from that era. Like there's actually, I live in Wisconsin, so like one show that I got into fairly early was, they did a show in Milwaukee, the O.J. Simpson show in 94, like when, like,
yes,
that like the White Bronco was being chased by the police. I think it's like June of 94.
Yeah.
It's at the Rave in Milwaukee, which is a venue I know.
Yeah, Milwaukee show, yeah.
Well, I like that show a lot, and there's a show at Red Rocks, I think, right around that time.
Yeah, a couple of years later,
And then there's a show in, like, in Chicago, and I know that's a famous show. I think that's, like, they actually sell that show, right? Like, that's like a box set show, isn't it? Like Chicago 94 or something.
There's
Chicago 94.
Yeah, this is the most fun game ever, Steven. That's the night after Milwaukee, after the OJ show, is 6/18/94, which has a wonderful David Bowie and all kinds of other stuff. And the Red Rocks is like 3 days later with also amazing show. So yeah, that's a good, awesome year from my perspective.
I saw this interview that Trey did on Charlie Rose in like 2004, maybe. It might have been around the time they broke up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm referring to?
Yeah.
Doesn't he talk about that Chicago show? That like time stopped or something, and like it was this magical, like dividing sky.
Yeah, he does talk about that.
Playing or something.
And that's one of the like many. That was such an insane time. I can't even like.
Yeah,
he was like very. I don't know. I think he was very much on drugs during that interview. But I do remember him talking about that. That was the divided sky from that Chicago show. See, Steven,
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you build yourself to us as a fish new, but here you are. You know, quoting the Charlie Rose interview and dropping knowledge on us here.
I feel like if I set up a low bar, I clear that bar, then I'm going to look smart.
It's perfect.
Because you don't want to sell yourself as like this expert, because then people are dropping like stats on you about, you know, they played this or the hair, you know. So, you know, I'm front loading my information that I know, my trivia, so it'll buy me like some respect, and hopefully I can like bank on that.
The rest of the podcast.
It's interesting about the, you know, your comment about him being on drugs at that time, which I know he like was by then, but I read the Park Puderbaugh book. Did I pronounce that correctly? I don't know if I did.
I think so.
At any rate, I read the Fish biography, and it was interesting to learn that like they didn't really do drugs for a really long time until they basically became this huge band. And then it just sounds like they had like, it sounds like a very conventional rock star story where there's like this huge entourage around you, and you know, there's people that want to get close to you, so then they end up giving you drugs, you know, to be your friend, and then it just ends up like destroying the band, you know, because it talks in that book about Trey spending hours figuring out set lists and, you know, obsessing over it, and how they would just, you know, play a show and then go rehearse like forever after, you know, after the show or whatever, and how it was just, it just seemed like they had this insane work ethic to have these perfect shows, you know. And then, of course, you get really rich and popular, and then all these like creepy people enter the picture, and it kind of ruins everything.
Right.
Yeah, I think old, those
old rock and roll story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're still. I think they're still around. Just they're like.
Yeah.
They're just getting smart about the situation.
I mean, like, I've only been to like one Phish show in my life. I went to Chicago, the Friday show.
Oh,
last
wow.
summer.
Amazing.
And you know, the crowd was fine. It wasn't that much different than like any other show I've been to. Mm-hmm. You know, like in terms of, like, can I swear on your podcast?
Yeah, definitely.
Of course. Okay.
Like, in terms of just like fucked up people, like, you know, I've seen. I didn't see any more or any less than any other show I'd ever been to. So, I mean, I've heard bad things. Yeah, I've heard things about like some of the big class. Actually, it's funny. My wife went to, what's that show? It was like a big show, like in Vermont,
the Coventry.
In the late 90s.
The Coventry?
Or is there like a?
Before that,
I don't know if it was Coventry.
So
it would have been like
Coventry was the
like 97, 98. It would have been like 97, 98. Yeah, she was in high school.
Maybe Great Wen or Clifford Ball or Lemon Wheel.
I think it was Great Wen.
Okay, Great Wen was a big. That was summer.
I think it was Great Wen.
Yeah, summer 97. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the one, and like it was a nightmare. She hated it, and I know that's. Yeah. I mean, is that one of the good ones? Because I know that, like, was Coventry the disastrous one, like, where it rained and it was, like, really muddy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, like, the last. That was, like, the final farewell, and it just turned into a shit show.
Yeah, Great One is good. It's fantastic. I mean, it's, like, it's one of those very much is in the middle of the funk bliss sort of. I mean, there's a lot of really nice jamming in there. It's a, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm sure there were like, I mean, there were probably like 50,000-60,000 people there or something crazy like that.
And yeah. Only Phish and all weekend long. So if you're not completely into it, I can get it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, honestly, like, I mean, another thing that drew me to Phish, you know, and again, just being like a huge classic rock fan that I am, that like Phish seemed like one of the like last bands that could have that kind of mythology that like those kind of bands had back then, that like I still kind of have a yearning for, you know, that I still kind of look for in bands, and like it's kind of hard to see, you know, because there is so much of a mythology around Phish. Both, you know they've got like the concept records and like, you know, in the song suites and like and just like the mythical shows, and like, and I love live albums, so that was like another kind of draw for Phish. Like, I like the I love hearing live stuff, and I also love the documentary aspect of live records, you know, just that they capture a moment in time, which I think is really cool. And like with Phish, you know, there's hundreds of live albums, there's thousands of live albums, you know, like they're unofficial, you know, they're bootlegs, but
that was really, it's funny that you're so attracted to 94, because I think 93 or 94, it was the most they've ever played in a year. Like, I think 94 was the most shows they've ever played in a year. So there's a ton of material from that year itself. And obviously the more shows and the more practice lends to them playing better. So they're really tuned in all year. So it makes a lot of sense.
Steven, you're a music journalist. You write about music. I'm sure that you're listening to music constantly. We've kind of touched on this throughout the conversation, but how does that, what you do for a living, influence the way you listen to Phish, or the way you approached it, or the way you don't approach it, or didn't approach it for a long time? I'm just curious if you think the fact that you're, you know, with the Pitchfork stuff we talked about, and, you know, the kind of the polarizing nature of Phish sometimes, how that influenced your whole sort of evolution.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that if I wasn't like a writer, that I would still be interested in discovering new music. But, like, you know, sometimes if you're left to your own devices, it's really easy just to kind of fall into set patterns of your life, you know, just listening to the same records over and over again. Mm-hmm. So, like, being a journalist, it does, like, encourage you to kind of get out of your shell a little bit and to always be looking for new things. So in that regard, it certainly, I think, influenced me to, like, care about fish. You know, I also like thinking about music as much as listening to it. You know, like, you know, sometimes records I like, sometimes there's records that I like that I just like instantly and I don't have to think about it because it just pushes my buttons and it appeals to my biases, you know. But there's other music that I'm like, maybe I don't totally understand this right away, but it's like, it engages with me intellectually. Like, it's like, oh, this is intriguing. Like, I don't get this, but, like, I kind of want to get it, or I want to, like, at least, you know, I want to dig deeper and try to figure this out, almost like a puzzle or something.
Nice.
And Fish was kind of like that. I mean, you know, I mean, just as a listener, I guess I just evolved to, like, you know, like, I mean, I first encountered Fish when I was in high school. Because, you know, I was in high school in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and then I went to college. So there were, I mean, I was like a teenager, and in my early 20s, like when Fish was sort of like at their peak,
mm-hmm.
and like I totally just avoided them. I mean, my roommate in college, my freshman year, loved Fish. Like, he had a live one, you know, and that was like a new live record at that time.
Right.
I mean, this was 96, and he would play it, and he'd be like, oh, listen to this piano, man, listen to this guy, his name's Paige, he's an amazing piano player, you know, and it just sounded like jerking off to me, you know, I'm like, this sucks, you know, it's like, I want to listen to Soundgarden or something, you know, or whatever.
Right. Not grungy enough.
Yeah, you know what I mean, yeah, it just wasn't in, it wasn't, you know, and, you know, with, I definitely came from the school of thought where, like, punk rock is predominant. And I think a lot of young music fans come from that school. And when you have that kind of background, you're just taught, it's just ingrained, to, like, look down on, like, jam bands, you know? Because it's just, it's just the antithesis of punk. And you just think that, like, well, it's got to be, it's got to be raw, it's got to be musically unschooled, it has to, you know, there's all of these things that are just ingrained in you that music has to be. And then you get older and you're like, well, this is bullshit, this is just rules that have been imposed on me, on records I'm supposed to like, this is music, like, what's wrong with this? It's just music, like, why can't I listen to it? So, you know, you get older and you listen, to, you start just hearing other kinds of music, and like, I would listen to jazz, or I would listen to prog rock, or I would listen to other stuff, and it just kind of, it just like loosens the cap, you know, on your brain to appreciate stuff like that. And then, you know, I became a big Grateful Dead fan, you know, and I love the Dead. But then, like, you listen to Fish and you realize, well, the Dead is really slow, you know, and I like that about the Dead. I like their slowness, but Fish has, like, an ecstatic quality to their jams, you know, like they build to crescendos and they get brought back down, but it's much more energetic than the Dead is, and the Dead is great in its own way, but like Fish live stuff, when it works, it can be really thrilling and fun. It can also be kind of exhausting. Like, I don't know how you guys are. I'd never listen to an entire Fish show in one setting. Like, I usually will listen to one set, and then after that I'm like sated, and then I'll, you know, listen to another set later on or something. But because usually one set is like, you know, 80 minutes or something of music. You know, that's quite a
nice build too. Yeah, right. Like a breather.
Like, I mean, that was like sort of an adjustment of seeing them live, where I was like, wow, not used to this much Fish music in one sitting. This is like a lot of Fish music, and I liked it. It was really cool to be in the environment, but I was like, whoa, like when you're standing there in the middle of like a 20-minute jam, it's like, whoa, this is long, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I should be more drunk. I should be more drunk for this, I think. Just to stand.
I think a lot of people feel like that.
Yeah. Right. I personally,
like, you know, I'm 37. So it's like, man, I need like a chair, you know, or, you know, I can come, because I'm used to listening to this in my office with like a Lazy Boy or something. It's a little cozier. But it is one of those bands that like most people know nothing about, but they know they hate them, you know. So it can be hard to talk to people about it. and they can get really angry with you if you make the case that they're a good band. I mean, I'm sure you guys encounter that all the time, or maybe you don't. I don't know. Yeah. But like when you talk to people who don't know the band, there is this hostility sometimes. You know, that you're like being contrarian.
Yeah, they just
like with that piece that I wrote for.
Yeah, they look down their nose at you like you must be a weirdo or a drug addict. You know, something that they just they're not into.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting.
What about? I mean, so Steven, you write about music, right? I mean, are there other albums or bands or whatever that you're listening to right now that you're really into, maybe over the past 6 months or so?
Yeah. There's a ton. Awesome. I mean, I don't know where to begin. Yeah.
What have you been going back to?
I don't know. I mean, I got them all over the place. I mean, so I listen to newer stuff now, older stuff all the time. So, you know, Courtney Barnett is awesome. You know, she's a singer-songwriter person from Australia. Mm-hmm. The last D'Angelo record is amazing. Nice. I've been listening to like Genesis a lot in the 70s.
Nice.
Like those Peter Gabriel records.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I've been listening to second tier Oasis albums. Like I love Oasis, and I've been listening to like the albums that like the lesser albums. But right. To me,
the Genesis thing was
being
funny.
A fan of the band. What's that?
I was going to say the Genesis thing is funny because last Halloween people were really looking forward to them covering the Genesis album, a Genesis album, especially one of the early ones, just because, as we talked about, they've got that progressive style and people just thought it would fit in, and the band's a fan of theirs, so it's great that you like them along with, you know, you like both the bands.
And I like the Phil Collins era too, or the Phil Collins era where
he's sure. Right.
Like, people are like, you got to choose, but it's like, no, man, like, no, Invisible Touch has jams on it, man. I don't care.
Yeah,
I like the synth jams, you know? You can like Invisible Touch and you can like Silly England by the Pound at the same time. Yeah. I mean, they're both good in their own way. So
totally agree.
So, you know, I'm all over the map.
Nice.
You know, and that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. Well, Steven, what about this? We've talked a lot about the Dead and Fish and both. Are you looking at going to the Chicago shows this summer? Or are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's impossible to get in or like hard to get in. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you guys getting?
I'm not going. I'm definitely not going. I'm getting the same. The same feeling. I feel like maybe things will like kind of settle down and sort of, you know, kind of level out at some point, but it sounds at this point like it's complete madness in terms of ticket demand. But there's like a lot of weird shit going on too about scalpers and, you know, the kind of typical stuff. I don't know.
Well, I mean, and are people confident that this is going to be good?
No. I don't think they're confident. It's one of those things. I think although most people who like Fish like the Dead, they also could be mutually exclusive, you know. And I think there's a lot of old Deadheads who are they've been looking forward to this for a long time, and it could have been any guitarist, and they would have, you know, been all in on it. And then there's us in the camp of loving both bands, and they're like, oh, we got to go to this. And then there's people on the Fish side, like, well, Trey's playing, so we should go check it out. So I think it's like there's three different types of fans that are all descending and determined to go. So
yeah, I mean,
and also scalpers.
Yeah, I mean, I would love, you know, all things being equal, I'd like to go. I mean, I would be thrilled about seeing them at Soldier Field. I mean, that's not the most aesthetically pleasing venue or the most auditory, you know, it's something that can have a great sound to it. So, no, I mean, the thing with the Dead, I mean, Jerry Garcia has been dead now for 20 years. So, and I know that Bob Weir has Rat Dog and Phil Lesh. I mean, I've actually heard some of the Phil Lesh and Friends stuff. That seems to really vary depending on who his guest stars are.
Sure.
But I don't know. it's weird because you want to go, but you also feel like that's gone, you know?
It's over.
Yeah. And if Jerry Garcia's not there, it's even with Trey there, it's not, you know what I mean? It's Jerry Garcia's a pretty, Trey I think is great, but he's not Jerry Garcia, you know?
Right.
Just like if you had some other guy and Fish or something. You know,
I don't think you gotta go with the RJ approach and just go with no expectations, you know? Just be glad you're
there. Yeah, I mean, you know, if they were just touring, you could just go see them, and it wasn't going to be this huge deal.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like it could just very easily suck, and you spend all this money and, you know, gone through all this hassle to go. But I don't know. That said, if I could get a ticket, I'd probably go. So, right. I don't know. I might try to get a press pass and cover it. It's an intrigue to cover it.
Nice.
But, you know, it's funny. I once went to a Dark Star Orchestra show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you familiar?
Yeah.
Because I was in a really big, like, Grateful Dead period. And I was like, and I think they were, I don't think they announced what show they were doing. But I was like, well, I got to go see this. And I went and just instantly regretted it as soon as I got there.
No good.
You know,
no
good. Not good. It was just like, you know, It was the underbelly of Deadhead Nation at the show. Just like, you know, the graying ponytails, like the bald guys with the graying ponytail, like every horrible cliche that you would go in thinking that would be like it confirmed it. And I was like, and it just seemed like kind of like it just seemed like necrophilia to me.
They've all got the personality of the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah, and it was like they're playing this, like, they're covering a show. I don't know, it just seemed like kind of anti what that band represents. Like, that band just seemed like, to me, like, you know, these bands represent, like, creativity and, like, kind of doing your own thing. And, like, they're just kind of slavishly copying some other band for people that, like, want to relive something that's over, you know? And it really kind of bummed me out. I couldn't even, like, finish the first set. I had to leave. So,
well, I think, I mean, honestly,
but hey, if you're listening, you like that, if you like that kind of thing, you know, no disrespect, that's just my opinion. I could not get into it. It depressed me.
I mean, I feel similarly about, like, going to see Further or Phil and Friends and other stuff that's even with the members of the band, because it's like you know, you're never going to recreate, like, 1973 or 77 or even 95 Dead, right? Like, you got these different dudes you bring in on guitar, and, you know, people I've heard from, friends who have seen both a lot of Dead shows and a lot of Fish shows, that it's going to be such a great, like, social kind of experience. Like, everyone that they know from these different worlds will be there, and it's sort of like a big party reunion celebration kind of thing, and not even necessarily about the music. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be weird, but I'm going to be happy to, I won't be sad to miss it. I'm not going to be happy to miss it, but I'm not going to be sad to miss it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it could be awesome. You know, maybe it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, how old is Weir? Is he 70?
Not yet. I don't think. I think Phil's the oldest, and he's like 75 maybe or something.
Okay, I guess Weir was pretty young when the Dead started, so he might.
Yeah, he was.
He was like the little. Yeah, he was the little kid.
But I think he's the most weathered.
Yeah, you still have that, like. Does he still have that, like, beard?
He does. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
But I think Phil Lesh is on, like, his second set of organs, so he's like. I mean, at least liver, right?
With the same bass, so it's all good.
I mean, sorry, I don't mean that to be disparaging. I'm being serious. I think he has, like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, hey. And if people want to go and have fun, I mean, more power to them. I mean, I hope they have a great time, and I hope the show is great. And I, you know, I'm not ruling out going, but I am intrigued by it. When I heard about it, I was like, oh, this could be cool.
Yeah.
So, who knows? I mean, they say it's their last show.
Last show ever. Yeah, Phil Lesh is 74 right now.
Wow.
He'll actually be 75 in March, so.
Nice.
That's okay. Like, yeah, I think he's probably, you know, he's probably nearing retirement.
So the question then, Stephen, would be, would you go see Oasis if, you know, Liam, I guess Liam's out of it anyway, but like if someone sat in for Noel, like, you know, in 20 years?
Well, if no, found, like, but a, I mean, you know, the thing with Oasis is that, like, you know, they fired, like, the rest of the band quit, I guess.
That's true.
They like, the classic era band, there was, I mean, it was really only Liam and Noel after, like, after Be Here Now. And if Liam and Noel got back together and did Oasis songs, yeah, I'd be there immediately. Sure. That'd be awesome. I'd be all over it. So,
I guess it's a really good question.
You know, I'm a hypocrite with that. You know, I mean, like, The Replacements. I love The Replacements. And it's Paul Westerberg and Tommy Stinson.
Mm-hmm.
Those, like, half the original band. So it's not really The Replacements, but they're playing these amazing songs. And I saw them, and I thought it was great. So, I don't know. It's just fun. It's just music, you know.
Yeah,
if you like it,
music.
And you're willing to put the money up,
right.
If you're willing to put the money and you enjoy it, then...
Right.
If you want to see Dark Star Orchestra, where it's none, it's nobody, it's just people playing the songs, but you love it, then more power to you.
I've seen a couple shows.
You know, life is too short, you know. Like, enjoy yourself.
Yeah. I don't mind. I like Dark Star Orchestra, but I take it for, you know, it's a recreation of a Grateful Dead show that I wasn't born to have seen. So it's a different thing. You know,
kind of
if you're going out with your pals,
yeah,
like we're gonna tie one on and we're gonna go to the show. It's gonna be awesome.
Yep,
you're gonna play songs we love.
Steven, talk quickly about the show that you mentioned being sort of a show that you keep going back to, Halloween '96, and just talk briefly about it. And for those listeners who want to go check out the show, come back and listen to the rest of this once you've refreshed yourself on the show, because we want to just discuss some of the highlights.
Do it.
So, Stephen, tell us just quickly sort of why you keep going back to this one, and what's sort of the draw. I guess we talked about it a little bit before, but anything musically with regard to the cover of Remain in Light or any of the other parts of the show that you find particularly noteworthy or worth revisiting?
Well, I mean... It's just a show that, like, I've recommended to people who don't know Phish and are looking for, like, sort of a good entry point. Because I think it is a way to get people into the band, you know, who, you know, maybe they're unsure what Phish is like, or they're intimidated by, like, just, you know, all the stuff that kind of goes with being a Phish fan. Like, I think that for a lot of people, when you look at a band like this, it seems like a high knowledge base. You know, you have to know what shows to like, and, you know, or what shows to check out, and there's, like, so many options and things like that, and it can be intimidating, I think, for people. And I think, like, when I've recommended shows, that's the show I bring up, because I'm like, well, they're playing this amazing Talking Heads album, so, you know, if you like that, that can be a bridge to check out, like, the other discs in that show, or, you know, some of the other parts of the set. I don't know, I mean... You know, like what you were saying before, it does seem to capture the band at an interesting point in their history, that they were really kind of peaking in popularity at that time, and they were playing really well. You know, it is sort of like toward the end of like their sort of arena rock period, and when they were sort of getting into more of a funky kind of spacey direction, but like not too far in that direction, like where it's like maybe hard to understand it if you're not totally into the band yet. But I don't know. I think it just shows off how versatile the band is, that they were able to pull off a cover of that record and do it in a credible way. You know, just sort of how sophisticated that album is rhythmically, and how they're able to do that as a four piece, I think is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trey's guitar playing is really great, and I think that album is a good showcase for him to show that off. I mean, they obviously stretch out the songs, although sometimes not. Some of the songs are like fairly straightforward covers, And I got to be honest, when I listen to that particular show, I tend to listen to that set more than the other sets yep. in that show. But like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like what's in the first part of that set. Like I know they do the Highway to Hell cover. I think they'd be like Down with Disease and
Prince Caspian,
yeah. Which it's funny because I always liked that version a lot. And like, I mentioned it in my story, like just saying like, I like that song mm-hmm. and Rob, and then I kind of said like, well, I know that these songs probably aren't obscure enough for like a lot of really serious fans. like Rob said, like when he read that story, he saw me mention Prince Caspian and he kind of like slapped his forehead a little bit like, oh, he mentioned that song because it's like kind of a, it's not like a very, it's a pretty straightforward song. It's not yeah. like, right. and live, they don't do a whole lot with it. But
yeah, but this was a particularly good, like I think all definitely. Almost all 96 Prince Caspians are different, are a little bit different. They have a really nice, I think Trey like just is very melodic and plays it really well. Tune. It's mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, this is the first
yeah. year. And, you know, that's kind of like a Beatle-esque song, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely Fish at its most melodic. Mm-hmm. And I think it is one of those songs where, you know, if you're not the type of listener who's going to judge a Fish song based on, like, how well they can stretch it out or, like, how complicated it is, if you're just kind of looking for a good tune, like, yeah. that's a song that you're maybe going to latch onto, which as a new listener I did, because I'm like, oh, this just sounds kind of like a Beatles song or something. You know, you're not going to dive like right into like Wilson or something or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to say too that like any show that starts off with Chalk Dust Torture, mm-hmm. I'm usually into, like if that's like the first song, mm-hmm. the nice. Second song in the mm-hmm. set, I'm usually like, that's usually, I don't know, for some reason, I really like Fish shows that start off with that song. And like a lot of shows from 93 and 94 start off with that. There's like a show. Is March 22nd, 93?
Yeah,
that's mean from, anything?
Yeah, Sacramento. It's a. I think they isn't that a Gamehenge? Don't they cover Gamehenge in the second set of that show?
Second set. Yeah.
That's the Gamehenge one. Okay.
And the Halloween set. I mean, it was nice to go back and listen to it this week. I don't know, Brad, what your sort of memories are. I think the. The in the first set, like Steven said, it's not there's not a ton there besides there's a really like a nice Reba and some other stuff, but the cover set is amazing. In the third set, they keep that extra drummer, you know, in there, and he kind of just plays the whole third set with them, which is just a totally different sound after they were kind of playing a lot of that actually in the Trey was playing a lot of like mini drum kit in 96, so now they just threw in this other real drummer and they're just like they're just having fun. I mean, it's why I don't know, Steven, it seems like it's a lot of like a lot of it is just they're having a blast, I think, covering this album and then continuing to play with these other musicians. You can feel the energy.
Yeah, and it does seem like they were still at this point like where you know, they weren't totally jaded yet, you know. It seemed like they were still like they had maybe some of that spirit from the older days, like where because like when you hear those 93, 94 shows, you know, you can definitely hear them kind of coming into their own, like where they're not this cult, you know. They're kind of, I mean, they're still a cult band, but like they were really kind of blowing up in a real way, and you can sense that there's a momentum, you know, that. On their side, and that's kind of exciting to hear. Like you can just hear it kind of coalescing for them.
Nice,
which is kind of cool. And you know, it definitely seems like later on, you know, I mean, I know certainly like early 2000 shows, like people, I haven't really delved into those. People have really kind of warned me about those. Yeah, which it'd be interesting to hear those. But I mean, it just sounds like they were just really burned out.
Yeah, they're the 2.0 jams, you know, as we call them. A lot of people within the community either love them or hate them. And the people who love them, I totally get it. And the people who hate them, I mean, maybe they don't hate them, but it's a kind of a dividing line, I think, maybe within the community, not like a serious one. But some people love them, some people hate them. But
I mean, sometimes, you know, and I was going to talk about this before, like. With Oasis albums, you know, like second tier and like kind of lesser albums, like when you're a fan of a band, Part of the fun sometimes is digging into the periods that like are not well regarded, mm-hmm. and like the bad the albums that like bombed or like people don't like, or I guess yeah. in the case of Fish, like eras like weren't, you know, maybe they weren't in the best of health or they weren't playing well. Because like if you're a fan, you can almost get burned out on the great stuff. So then you want to kind of dig into like the not as good stuff. Because sometimes there's some jewels in there, but then also it can help you understand the band a little bit more if you can hear them when they're not at their best. Because then that helps you understand, like, okay, this is why this stuff is great, because now I can hear when it's not working.
Sure.
You know?
Helps you become the best fan you can be, you know?
Yeah, because, like, I love the Rolling Stones. Like, the Rolling Stones are, like, one of my favorite bands ever. Like, I love bad Rolling Stones albums. Like, I love Black and Blue.
Black and Blue is great. Black and Blue is
great. It's great, but, like, you know, there's, like, Fight It. It's like they're trying out. I mean, it's hilarious. Yeah, because they were trying out guitar players, and they're like, "Well, we might as well just use these tracks."
Yeah,
you know, so there's like, you know, there's like a different guitar player like on every track, and it's like, you know, they have like stuff like Hot Stuff,
it's
obviously just like a piece of shit jam, thing, you know, lick like a disco lick. But you know, there's an awesomeness to the badness of some of those songs where you're like, "This is," they sound so like just fucked up and like out of their heads and like. It's not working, but it's like, it's the Stones and it's great. And like, I would rather hear the Stones be terrible than like most bands be great. You know,
reminds me of the awesome quote that people refer to so often that like Trey could urinate in your ears and Fish fans' ears and they would, you know, think it's amazing. Who's same thing guy, with any band you love.
Who's the guy that like was arrested for like kidnapping a kid for like 15 minutes, or like, wasn't there a story about that? Like, was that Tate?
Yes. It was Mike.
Mike, who was with a kid.
Yeah, it was a misunderstanding.
I know. Like, what's the story that like that he was like? Was there like like funny business going on? Like that was the allegation, but then he was clear.
It's really long, and there's a lot of like details. But I would tell you just to Google it.
No,
see, the people who are listening to this, probably know the story, and they're like, "Oh, dude, why are you bringing this up?"
No. Exactly.
It's really funny that you brought it up though, because it's like it's funny. It's a funny weird thing. I think he like. Yeah, it was backstage at a Phil and Friends show or something when Fish wasn't touring.
It was in Jersey.
He ended up like in a boat house behind a venue with like a young girl, but he was just like doing photography. So
he's a photographer.
You know? I mean, he's such a weird guy.
The problem was
the
girl's dad was part of the Hell's Angels. I think, is that right?
I think
so. Like they didn't take well to it, and they just like beat the shit out of him.
So, Steven, I think on that note, I think it's probably a good way to wrap it up. Steven, it was great to chat with you about, you know, not only Fish, but just, you know, music and everything else. And thank you for joining us.
Steven, thanks so much for joining us. As RJ said, I know you want to chat about things other than Fish with guests, you know.
I like
And to touch on things that are a little bit cringeworthy.
Yeah. It's good getting a perspective from you, like someone who likes the band and who appreciates the band, but who isn't so obsessed with the band like almost everyone else we've had on here, and in a good way, because that's why we started it, you know? But
yeah, absolutely, guys.
Steven is at Steven_Hyden at Twitter. And and he writes writes for Grantland. Check him out. He writes a lot of... I liked your Grammys rundown. I thought that was pretty funny. So you read a lot of good and entertaining stuff. So thanks for all you do.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So that was really fun to have Steven on. Glad you could take the time. RJ, I'm glad you could take the time.
I'm glad you could take the time.
Take the time. This time. Thanks for listening, as always, and checking us out. And downloading us. We got a lot of feedback. I guess we didn't say this at the beginning. We got a lot of feedback about not having the shows. I know there's a few people who still wanted the music included, but I think we've made the executive decision to not include it just for file size and the fact that this is a democracy. And though we got more votes for no show included than to include, right, RJ?
Yeah, sorry, Jonathan.
I mean, I guess actually it's an RJocracy, and you're just like screw it all the hell away.
Yeah, man, that movie is a dictatorship for sure. It's pretty sweet. I enjoy all the spoils of being the dictator, like such as, I can't think of any right now.
Keep it coming with the feedback. We appreciate it. This episode was really fun. I'm glad that Steven took the time. As always, we're at Twitter at HFPod, and you can email us at helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on Stitcher or our blog spot, which is hfpod.blogspot.com. Right, RJ? We have a blog.
We do a lot of blogs. We're doing some thought leadership and some
names.
We're just, you know, we're blogging. We're doing some blogs, and we got apps in the works. Developing.
We have a Facebook page.
It's been pretty updated. Awesome. We updated it in 2013. It was pretty sweet. So yeah, we'll be back again in like a week or a week and a half or however long it's been, and then we're gonna have another guest, and we're gonna talk about fish, and it's gonna be fun. So I guess awesome. That's about it. All right, everyone should just keep on rocking, and until the next time we talk.